Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
All right, guys, welcome back to Rich Hill's Golf Show podcast.
Yep,
episode 84.
Nice. Nice save.
Thank you. I'm Rich Hill's. I got my name right this time, at least. I'm here with Guy. I'm here with a guest as well, Peter Finch.
Hey, how we doing?
I'm all right, thanks, Pete. This is like, we've just sat down 55 minutes and gone through all the controversial, the open topics. We've bared all. I feel like we've come out of it in a much better place. But
that's interesting.
We're going to go back. But now we're going to go back in and have a little Peter Finch proper podcast.
Okay.
So, Pete, explain to the audience, like, how did... And I want to go even back. Because I don't think I'm massive in a story. Like, how did you even get into golf in the first place?
Dad introduced it to me.
But I was... How old?
About 12, 13. Well, no, to be fair, probably a bit younger than that. But I didn't really start playing until I was 13. Because I was just always more into my football.
And your dad... played for a lot of his life.
Yeah.
Did he get into it early?
No, not so much. I think he was like 20s as well.
Oh, right, okay.
So he was just at a local club in Preston. Like,
what got him into it, do you know?
I'm not sure, no.
Because normally it's family into it, really.
Getting away from the family, I think. but no, nothing specific. It was just another, for me, and it was just like another sport to play. Like, I played loads and loads of sports as a kid. And football was always my favourite. And then I got good enough at golf for that to kind of warrant more of my time.
Yes.
And then I got injured playing football, and then I couldn't play golf. And I thought, well, I'm actually missing golf more than football. So then just carried on from there.
What other sports? Football, golf, anything else?
Oh,
I played cricket. I can imagine you'd be a cricketer.
Yeah, I was good cricket.
Rugby?
Rugby. Preston's not a massive rugby town.
Not where I lived. It was big where you lived.
Helen's big, yeah.
See, where I live, rugby wasn't... It's hardly even a thing, really.
Nah. So, it was football, cricket, hockey, I was decent at. Badminton, I thought I was good at until I actually played someone who was
good.
That's
the thing with badminton, is that you play someone that's good and you're just running around like an idiot.
And then, I just played everything, to be fair.
You know a sport I never got into? Tennis. Like, I feel like I never really got into tennis.
No.
I was awesome at everything apart from serving, which is the most important thing. As soon as the ball went above my head, literally lost my mind.
Underarm serves.
Honestly, every time I played, it ended up being just like underarming it over. I couldn't get it.
So 13, you got into golf, kind of bit of football, and you kind of obviously shifted more into golf. Like, what was a young Peter Finch at 13 to 15, was he a good player?
Can you remember your clubs? I always like to know what people's like first or either your first clubs or the first ones that you remember getting and absolutely loving or wanting.
I remember my first clubs were like Howson, Derby 2s.
Yeah, you say Howson then, yeah.
Howson
was Howson hippo, wasn't there?
Yeah, Howson with the bomber. Yeah, I always regret. I should be playing them still now.
Imagine.
Yeah, frothing at the mouth. I'm like that excited. House of Derby 2s, then I remember getting, when I started to get decent, got some Ping Guy 3s.
Oh, nice.
And I went down to Gainsborough to get fitted, but I just had a lesson before I went fitted. And for whatever reason, the pro was getting me to stand mega tall with like my hands really high.
So you're upright.
Yeah, so I got fit for like 3 degrees upright clubs.
Like green dot or whatever it would be.
Yeah. Like what, 15-year-old?
Yeah, and I was...
You grow into him, son.
it was completely ridiculous. And that like just put me back for about maybe a year and a bit. But yeah, I think those are the clubs I really remember. Have at college.
Were you into the Jalen
DeBerg
scene?
I feel like you were ping at college.
Yeah,
I always feel like you were a ping kind of iron player, definitely. Yeah. You probably grew into those ones that you played.
Yeah, still, well, we just got rid of them.
Were you like Rick? Were you into your Jay Lindeberg stuff as a kind of junior into 18, 19 age, or you know?
Nah. I couldn't afford it for a start.
Were you very much into this there? I remember that era though. It was like golf fashion really went a bit wacky. It was all the white belts. It was like coloured pants. It was very out there, wasn't it?
I could only afford the £25 sweatbands. It wasn't like I was fully, to be honest, I did have quite a bit. I was quite fortunate. But
Von Dutch's. Von Dutch Mafia.
That was good, back in the day.
To be fair, God, I don't... I just got whatever I feel.
If I remember a Pete... So I want to set the scene. And have you ever talked about the first day at college?
When you met Pete?
Well, just the first day of going to college. I think a lot of people know, but we went to college. That's the first place we met, 16 years old, at a college in Preston. Mm-hmm. Which you were quite lucky because you lived so close, didn't you?
Oh, I had to get a bus in there.
Oh, really?
With his golf clubs.
Not a great bus guy.
So how long? Was about half an hour journey?
Yeah.
So
it was on a Preston bus.
With a Walkman.
So it felt like an hour.
So at 16, I was probably about an hour and 20 away from college. So I lived in Monday to Friday. Loved it. Do you regret not living in?
I do, yeah. I do in some respects. And in others, like I never would have like got through college if I'd lived in. So I wouldn't have ever gone to anything.
Great, did I? For me, I turned up first day. And this might set the scene. Can you remember what you wore first day when you went there?
No.
Well, I had. I remember it vividly, right?
Go on.
You're pulling your face.
I just imagine it's going to be horrendous.
So, a black polo.
Good start.
Okay. Strong. But it was a Burberry black polo.
Of course it was.
Was a little hint somewhere of Burberry?
Not little hint. It looked like someone had thrown up at Burberry. So, all the collar with Burberry check.
Right.
The wraparound of the arms.
Oh, yeah.
The button down was all
and was
Burberry.
It genuine?
Yes. £55 I paid for that. What else did I have? I might have had a Burberry hat as well.
Oh. Did you have an earring at any point?
Two earrings.
Yeah, so I didn't really know earrings. Rick to begin with. I kind of thought, well, he's someone to stay away from. Bloody hell.
Yeah, I definitely went with this idea. I'm going to set a statement early. I think for me, I was quite not dead shy at school, but I was like never one of the super popular boys, but I was kind of I got in the football
team. Times have changed.
I got in the football not really I got in the football team, so I always felt like, well, at least I feel like I'm top maybe 11.
Did you
most
really
popular.
What yeah, position
yeah. Left wing, weirdly, even though I wasn't really left footed. I was famously, and this probably would, I think a lot of people would know this, kind of understand this story because of the stuff I've said on the podcast in the past. Famously, I was most known for doing the most horrendous tackle on a lad from a different school. Nearly broke his legs and I got sent off. But I went down as like a hero.
Did you put your collar up like a bit of an Eric Cantona vibe?
Probably,
I feel like you could have done that.
Got sent off from a school match. That must have been a bad tackle.
It was horrendous. And what's weird, this is dead strange, and I don't know why I'm saying this on the podcast, that lad that I tackled, right, I kind of weirdly had some beef with him. I don't know why. So I tackled him at school, nearly broke his legs, got sent off, right? And it was middle of the pitch. He wasn't going to score, but somehow I got hailed a hero. About 6 months later, we were playing football again in like a local park, and he was kind of a local lad.
He was at the side on crutches.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah.
He was playing again, right?
Sitting there with a blanket over his legs.
And weirdly, I don't know why, I decided to have another go.
Oh, my God.
But this time, karma came back at me. So I went to slide, right, and nearly took his legs out. Wet pitch, it was great. But what I hadn't noticed, but it was like near a bush, kind of like a fern bush, and like a branch had fallen down with a really sharp prong sticking out of it. Absolutely sliced my leg. I've still got the scar to this day. I'll try and...
Rick's just getting his leg out. For the people listening at home, Rick's just getting his leg out to show.
Wait,
Pete.
Let me show you. This is the scar I got.
Christ, get on the table now. Oh, God, yeah.
That famous tackle.
Oh wow, that's a proper one. That. So. Oh, there you go.
I actually tell my kids it's where I dodged a bullet.
Of course.
Back in the day when I was, you know,
don't the know mean what streets I was doing. Of Bolton.
So anyway,
but how did you dodge a bullet if it went in your leg?
It sliced past.
Right. Okay.
That's what I tell the kids.
Yes.
I'll have to tell them one day it was actually dad just being an idiot trying to slide tackle a lad.
Yeah.
What's weird to the story?
Quite strong to tell your kids that already.
Yeah. I don't know what this.
Be afraid to go outside.
This is the bad part of the story. So this lad nearly broke his leg twice, right? He might actually listen to the podcast, weirdly. I know his mate does. Years later, marry my wife, obviously, or get my wife. She's a school teacher, right? So one of the first days in like meeting her and talking about school and something like that. I think a couple of weeks weird, I went into school to help her out or whatever, and I'm looking on this board of all the teachers. The lad who I nearly broke is a teacher at my wife's school.
I feel like I really like this
and
lad.
Then you slid like into the maths lesson.
I went for number three.
The third time.
So anyway, I don't mind telling this story, but I thought it'd be quite interesting. Break the ice. For me, so then, because I kind of came out of school as quite a shy boy, as you can see, I felt like college was my time to go, let's not be Ricky. I'm going to go in Burberry. I think I had two earrings, two diamond earrings. My hair, definitely a different colour, bleached or something. And I really went in to make a statement. And I think it worked.
I think Pete looked at you and thought, what a cock that guy is.
I reckon you turned up in like brown, like slightly oversized chinos and a very conservative FootJoy t-shirt.
Probably. It's probably Donna. Like... I think I was going through my sports direct Donna phase at that point.
So anyway, we went to college together. We met lots of friends at college. Obviously, Carter, Sam Meller. Who have I missed there? They're the two main ones.
Loads, weren't they?
I feel like I've missed loads. There was loads of people at our college at the time because even though me and Pete were in the same year, did we have about 40 students in our year?
Yeah, it was quite a few. Kind of whittled down a bit and then...
You also had like 4 years ahead of us of the students that had been there already who mm-hmm. also into golf. Once we moved into second year, the year below was also into golf. A lot of the sports... students were also weirdly into golf, so it was a mad hub, wasn't it? Really,
there's quite a few older than us as well.
Because yeah, like, because UConn,
because it was like a national diploma. It wasn't like
pull my leg, trouser leg down here. I have to get up
because it was like a national diploma. There's quite a few people in our year who were quite a bit older, like 17, 18 already. Bad influences.
I was going to go to that college, and I went to go and view it, and it looked really good. I decided not to, but I kind of wish I did now.
Did you like it at my school?
Yeah, I lied. I'm not a great classroom guy. So I enjoyed getting out and playing golf, but like the rest of it was so.
When you were going to college, and I certainly had this mindset, did you think we were going to college just to play golf?
Of course, yeah.
I really thought that. I honestly thought we were going to college to literally play golf 9 to 5, Monday to Friday.
Yeah. And what did it actually involve?
Oh, it's like learning to run sports clubs and all this. I'm like, not here for this.
And like the sports psychology, nutrition and fitness. Mm-hmm. What other courses did we have? It was like a sports course that incorporated golf elements.
Yeah. So could other people do it, but they'd implement like football as such?
Yeah. So there was other courses that almost ran parallel with each other that would be almost be the same syllabus, but their sport was football or rugby.
Were golf teams the geeky lads then or not?
Well, until Ricky Shields turned up.
Oh, yeah, Rick really changed the perception of golfers.
It's quite incredible. I told this, like a one-man wave of change, yours.
The fact that I completely...
It's like a Lynx Africa advert where all the girls just stop what they're doing and look at Rick as he struts through in slow motion.
It's all the football lads who wanted to knock my head off.
Yeah, that's true. Oh, you made so many friends in the football lot,
didn't you? So many friends.
Yeah, I think everyone literally in our class by the second year ended up looking the same. Like everyone had bleached hair, everyone wore a visor.
See?
What year was this? Can you remember?
2001 and 2
I think.
That was a big era for golf fight. Did you used to gel your hair and then put your visor on? And then when you took your visor off, you'd have a big flat bit at the front, but all spiky.
It wasn't
3 and 4.
Dex.
Did you start high school in 97? So what year would we have finished? 97, 98, 99, 2000, 2001. We would have finished school in 2001.
Yeah, so 2002, 2003.
And 2004, yeah.
That's how years work. I mean, listen.
Rick didn't like doing maths at college.
There were some classes you should have attended.
That's why Rick shoots 73. Rick, it was 85, mate. I went one in the bunker. I had to get out. I got a 3.
Yeah, math's never been my strongest point.
Yeah, I was watching Break 75 scratch your head a little bit.
I wonder why I got paid 10 grand last month.
Counting them all up going, that was 95, but it says the scores are
85. I took one of those shot clickers out. I was like...
but for me, college was the biggest life learning experience ever. Mm. Like, for me, I made a lot of mistakes. I grew up very quickly at college. We went out a lot. I don't remember... You definitely came out, but you weren't one of the regular out-outers, were you?
It was just Wednesday. I just came out every Wednesday, went to Tokes.
So I was like Monday, Wednesday, Thursday.
It's because you, I was the same at uni. When you live out, you still want to go out. Sorry, when you live at home, it's, you don't get them spontaneous nights out as much. You'd be at home chilling and like, you're coming out, Pete. It's like, oh, I've got to get the bus into town. Whereas you're all there on it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Wednesday and every occasional Monday, Squires. That's a good shout.
What was a Wednesday like then? Took me for a Wednesday night out.
50p a pint. So good. Disgraceful. Was it disgusting?
So would you meet us at college or would you meet in town?
Meet in town, yeah.
So for us at college, let's say it was eight of us, right? I used to have a number of a taxi driver who would always do this ridiculous deal. So it was something like return, let's say 20 quid return, right? And there's eight of us. So that's like little over 2 quid, yeah. Right? So that was your taxi money sorted. Then if you got into the bar, was it before 10 or maybe before 11?
In Squires?
Yeah, no, in Tokes.
Oh, it was open from like 8. So all of us were queuing up, like trying to smuggle in like Pidge or Joppo in the middle. Like two lads who were older than us who looked like literally 12.
Really? So you weren't old enough at this point, were you? So did you have fake ID?
Yeah.
Did you?
Yeah.
We were just saying this for effect. Of course we were old.
I could tell a really funny story about the fake ID. Do you remember the story about the fake ID?
No, don't. Because I'm pretty sure that was a criminal offence.
Right, okay. It was a driving licence or passport, don't say it.
I think the statute of limitations have probably shifted by now, but like just in case.
Okay, it was good though. It
was literally a widespread fraud.
Just a check, you don't condone underage drinking?
No.
Okay, thank you. And nor do you, Pete, either.
No, but we're from the north of England, like it's...
So anyway, yeah, college. I mean, it's probably not painting college in a great light here, but we'll talk.
I think it's accurate, though.
Nice positives as well. Times must have changed. It can't go on like this anymore.
It's a great facility now. And to be fair, I don't think we took, because it was quite a new course, I don't think we probably took advantage of the actual classes that were on available. But now they've got a massive indoor kind of short game area and smart now.
Jokes aside, then obviously you've both done unbelievably well, so I'm sure it doesn't matter too much. But now you're older and more mature-ish. Do you look back and think you'd wish you'd done more with the educational side, the practicing side, or you're just happy you had a good time?
For me, it's hard for me to regret anything because I felt like at the age of 18, from that 16 to 18, I'd lived life, like really lived it, going out loads, having a great time. And I felt like 18, I'd got it all out of my system and I was ready to work. For me,
are you the same, Pete?
Yeah, I wasn't no interest in going to uni. Like, that was it for me.
That was almost our uni. Like, yeah. I felt like then at 18, I wanted to get a job and I wanted to start my career.
Because that's the thing, when you're 16, it's quite young to be thinking about what you want to do when you're a grown up, isn't it? And your life choices. But equally on the flip side, like you two have let your hair down, blown off the steam to get into work. Then did you move down to the Midlands, Pete, at that point?
Yeah, I went down to Shropshire.
Like, was this for golf at this point?
It was for a lady.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah. Which worked out well. Yeah, so basically...
This isn't the lady you're with now.
No.
This is another lady.
No. Yes, this is another lady.
Pete's had many ladies.
I was just trying to keep track.
Monday, Tuesday.
I need that quicker. I basically wanted to... Because I wanted to do my PGA, so I knew I wanted to
just quick one. Can we hear Pete all right? Is it not too far away or anything?
Okay. Okay. Sorry, I'm just...
No, you're good.
I can throw it away. Yeah, I wanted to do my PGA, and when you want to be an assistant, you just need an assistant's position. And there was one going down in Shropshire, and my ex had family down in Shropshire. So ended up going down there. That situation didn't last overly long, but then stayed down in Shropshire for like 10 years before moving.
Did you have to get
up
your own place and stuff then? Because I was quite young, we were 18 at this point, and then you went off with the girl. Well, the girl thing didn't work out. So how old were you at this point, like early 20s or what?
No, 18, 19.
All right, so you had to get your own place then. Well, that's quite a big move at that age.
Yeah, to be fair, it was good. The place I was at, the Shropshire, there was a group of like 10 to 12 of us, like bar staff, waitresses and pros, assistant pros. And we're all the same age. And it was basically like being at uni, just with
a bit more
money kind of coming in.
Oh, my days.
And it was great. I absolutely loved every second of it. I mean, getting my own place was... It was horrendous.
Did you share with these people in like a flat or a house or something? Or?
No, I got a flat in Wellington in Telford, which was above like a fish and chip shop. And it is as glamorous as it sounds. I had like one pane window, freezing in the winter, boiling in the summer. Didn't have a bed. It was great.
Didn't have a bed?
I slept on the floor for like 2-3 years. I kind of just got used to it.
Oh my
God. Why you got my back?
Probably. I got a bed. So... My parents came to visit and they took so much pity on me. They're like, right, we're going to get you a bed. So got a bed, put it up in the flat, and then literally within a day, I'd broken it.
How did you break the bed?
And I
Pete?
Would love
that was lady number two.
And I would love to say it was me being absolute romantic, but it wasn't. It was my mate power slamming another friend onto it.
Okay.
Yeah, and then it was propped up on books.
Wow. Oh my word. God, you've really been through the grind.
So then,
makes me a man.
How did you then end up from being in Telford to being back up to Trafford, which is where obviously then you got reconnected with Rick, possibly, is that the right phrase?
Well, rekindled. Because at college, like, because Pete again lived out of college, we obviously knew each other, but it wasn't like we knew. I don't know, we weren't like, because you didn't live in, you're real like close friends lived in, where you kind of connected more with the friends who lived out, didn't you, really? Like Natalie lived out, didn't she? And you kind of connected with her a bit, and then we obviously crossed paths and stuff. So you were, I feel like we're missing a big part there, because when you were down south, you then moved out of golf as well, didn't you?
Yeah. So I went into, I finished my PGA qualification and I was working in a shop, doing a little bit of coaching, but it was, The whole shop environment for me just wasn't going to work. I couldn't see myself in that situation.
What club were you at there, sorry?
So I was at the Shropshire, and then I finished my training at Lillishaw Golf Club. So
is that a football thing, Lillishaw, or is that a different thing?
It used to have the national, like what St. George's Park is now. Yeah. It used to be there.
Because I've heard loads of footballers went there to study, didn't they, as well?
Yeah, so there's like a massive sports centre there. I think the National Archery Centre's there, and like gymnastics. It's an amazing place, and the course is really cool. It's really nice. It's only short, but like the back nine's blasted through trees. It's lovely. Oh, nice. Like it's an amazing summer evening course. I just didn't want to be in that shop environment. And I'd been doing some kind of articles for some golf magazines, just on equipment and stuff. And then ended up doing some journalism qualifications and getting a job at a paper. So I was a daily newspaper journalist for like 3 years.
And would that be about just things that have happened in the area? Like,
yeah, the only thing I didn't do was sport. The only thing I knew anything about.
Name me the maddest story you had to write about.
There's been a few. oh crikey! Right, what time does this podcast go out?
We can bleep if necessary.
No, so I mean, there's quite a few situations where I kind of put myself in a dodgy place with some people who probably weren't the nicest in the world, just to try and get some stories. But probably the best example I can give of what it was like, and this is what it's like for a lot of daily kind of local to regional journalists. I was working in like the main office, which covered a lot of Shropshire, and like I was doing well, and they basically transferred me down to the Ludlow office, and that's in the south of Shropshire. It's very countryside. And they said, right, no one's really there at the moment. You go run that. And I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. I'm giving my own office. And then the last night I was on call, and there was a big fire at like an old building in Telford, and it was an arson. So I went down there, like it was on fire, fire brigade were there, and I saw this guy like standing outside, like looking at the building, like really upset and sad. So I went over, I said, are you all right? It turned out he was the owner of the building. So I got like a full interview off him. Like,
you're there with your pen and paper.
Yeah, honestly.
This is great, this is gold.
Oh, honestly, being a journalist turns you into a horrible person at times. And I was like, really? Please tell me about your upset.
Come sit down.
Anyway, got the whole story, and that was like, it was front page, it was amazing. Next day I was down in Shropshire, and I was down in Ludlow, and I was like, oh man, this is great. I went down there, got a phone call from the news desk, and they're like, are you on your way to Ludlow? Got a story for you. It's just happening now if you want to get over to it. And I was like, all right, yeah, cool, where am I? So, well, just outside Ludlow on the A49, there's a cow loose. We need you to go get the story.
Oh my God.
Of a cow.
Oh my God.
Being loose on a road. And I was like,
What is the story there?
Exactly. And I was still quite young. I didn't feel like saying, what am I going to do? What am I going to ask the cow? Like, what am I meant to be doing here?
It's like making YouTube content.
Yeah.
So how can I make this into a video?
So I was like, chase this cow around the country lane to Ludlow. I couldn't find it. And that was like that. And then I spent a year down in Ludlow. And then by the end of that, it was clear it just wasn't. It wasn't going to be.
Was it because it was a small like countryside? Little things become big stories. I.e., a cow loose became. I mean, that's not going to happen in London or something. That's not going to become a headline story. A cow's loose, is it? But no. Did little stories become bigger because of the smaller place?
Yeah, 100%. And there's like a lot of local politics, and it was, it's very. It's a nice representation, really. Sometimes what happens on social media, like a little story within a little community, get really big, everyone getting angry.
That sounds familiar.
I know. Hold on.
And it was like, oh, it was so funny. But yeah, it taught me a lot. I definitely grew up a lot, and I definitely had a bigger appreciation for what being in golf is like. Like the last story I did, it basically made me quit. There was a young lad, he'd back from uni, and his family had a farm in South Shropshire, and he was helping fix the grain silos, so those big ones. Mm. And the roof collapsed, and he fell into the silo and basically drowned in the grain. It's like quicksand, just drowned in the grain.
Oh my God, that's horrible.
And because he was my patch, news desk was like, whenever someone passes away, you need to go out to the house and try to speak to the family so they can give a tribute and, you know, tell you the story. It's a horrible, horrible job, like doorstepping people like that. And I was basically driving up to this farm. It was in the winter. It was snowing. It was bleak. Like, got into the yard. All the lights were on the house. There was a dog out in the yard, like, freezing. And I got out of the car and I was like, oh, what am I doing here? Like, what am I doing here? This is not what I want to do. So I just drove back and gave him a notice. And then worked at a driving range down there, still not sure about what I wanted to do. And then job, I don't know how I heard of the job at Trafford, actually. I'm not sure, but it was
definitely advertised.
Yeah, yeah.
Definitely advertised for the position.
I maybe saw it on the PGA. And it was at the time my mum had fallen ill at that time. I just wanted to be kind of closer up north to the family. So, and I knew you were there and Carter was there.
Yeah.
So it was a case of like, who you know, not
it
what
was,
you know.
It was very much who you know.
Yeah.
So, quick question on journalism then. Have you got is there a clip, you know, when you've got that front page that say like, written by Peter Finch?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I used to collect them all, yeah. Yeah, I used to collect them all.
Because that's the only real recognition a journalist really gets, isn't it? Like, just that little bit of a nod at the end of a story.
Yeah, front page byline, yeah.
Do you think like that's where, like, I don't know why I'm talking about journalism, but just, like, it's got, like, national-wise, it's why there's so much pressure on these paps and these journalists to get these, like, headline stories, like, when they're, like, harassing, like, Matt Hancock's wife when she's... Like, there's a lot of pressure, isn't there? Like, you've got to get a story, really. It's a bit of a nasty kind of world to live in, really, isn't
it? Yeah, it is. It's not great. I think a lot of journalists, like, I have a lot of sympathy for them, because a lot of the times they're just sent to cover a story.
Of course. It's not their choice, is it, really?
No. And, like, you know, it's completely off topic, but a lot of the very best journalism, it's not done like that. You know, the best journalists and the best stories, they take weeks to put together.
Of course.
And certainly from my point of view, I was like given like a morning, go get the story.
Oh my God. Anyway, I remember, so when we were at Trafford, so there was four pros at Trafford, Carter being one of them, me, director of golf, Pete Stiles. I'm trying to think whose job you took. James Hopkins?
Adrian
or James?
I think it was James. I think they left quite close together.
Yeah, but
I
very
think
close.
I took James's, yeah.
So there was four of us, but the facility got busier, much busier at Trafford, and it was opening for longer hours. We started to open earlier in the morning until later at
7,
night.
Didn't it?
7 in the morning until 10 p.m. And basically, there was room for other pros, so we put this job advert out. And I was working quite closely with Pete Stiles at the time, trying to recruit a new person coming in. And we had the CV that got put on our desk, and from Peter Finch, and Pete said, "Do you know Pete?" And I said, "Is it?" Because there was a couple of Peter Finches. You've had this issue, haven't you, over the last few years?
Yeah.
We've got to come on to the story of the Peter Finches. I was like, yeah, but is it our Peter Finch? We're like, we're not sure.
The real Peter Finch.
I was like, me and Carter are going, is it the Peter Finch we know? I'm not sure. Did we message you? There was something.
I can't remember,
yeah. Anyway, you came up for an interview and it was pretty much a given you were going to get the job. And obviously you joined the team, and the rest is kind of history, obviously, with stuff with YouTube. Because at the time, what year was that? Do you remember?
I can't remember.
I think this was...
probably 7 years ago now.
I think it was 2013. Because I stopped working at the American Golf in 2013, and I feel like you didn't work there when I worked at the American Golf, but because I used to come in because of Nike all the time, you were there. If that makes sense.
It was, yeah, it was 13 or 14.
Maybe early 14.
Because 13, I hadn't really started YouTube, a little tiny bit, because that was the year I got married. I remember being on my honeymoon releasing videos weirdly, but it was very, very loose. But 14, I kind of kicked it up a little bit more. So it might have been 14. Yeah. And you joined the team. And then kind of where did... I've heard this story a few times, but for people listening, obviously that then threw you into a full-time teaching position. Did you find that challenging at first? Did you find that quite hard?
Yeah, I'm not. The only problem with being at a driving range in the past was that you've got to drum up your own business. And I hate with a passion, being the guy who goes around collecting baskets, stands there, waits till they hit a bad shot and be like, ooh, struggling, are we? I know someone who could give you some lessons. Let me give you this quick tip.
That was me.
That was what we used to collect baskets, didn't you, Rick?
I love that. I was a basket picker.
It's a different personality, though, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, that's the thing. I'm not, you know, if a stranger speaks to me in the street, I have a mild panic attack. I don't know what to do. Mm. I can't cope with new people. So, like, that kind of environment, like,
Just quickly interrupting, I'm sorry on that. Do you find it weird then people come to you who are fans of the channel and now have you got used to that a bit more?
I'm used to that and I like that because they already kind of know me.
Yeah.
And that's a lot.
It's not an actual stranger in a
exactly,
way.
Exactly, yeah. And that's why...
You've been drummed into your stranger danger.
Exactly.
Because you got shot in Bolton as a kid. Scared him off.
I tell you, rough streets up there. But no, and certainly this was the same with coaching once YouTube had all started. When people come in who've like watched your videos, it's so you already have something to talk about.
Yeah,
and that's so much easier.
Even that little bit of like, oh, your video last week we did, that was good. There's something to talk about, isn't there? Some level of like something that you've got in common, I guess.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there's always whenever you coach a new person, there's always that like awkward getting to know people phase. Mm. And what YouTube really did from a coaching standpoint, it kind of took that away. Because like by the end of certainly at Trafford, like it was clients either that I'd had for a while or new people coming in to watch the videos. So it's just so much easier.
Quick question for both of you then, actually. I've never thought of this before. I know, you don't really coach much now, but because you obviously had large followings when you were coaching, did either of you ever feel any pressure when people came in because they thought, Rick, Pete, whatever, you've got, I did that the wrong way around then, Pete, Rick, you've got, let's say, 100,000 followers at the time, whatever, you're going to be the best golf coach I've ever seen. I've been to see 5 coaches before. You're going to be the best. Did you ever feel pressure to almost perform?
That was the best.
Did you like that?
Because they almost, you could have honestly, there was so much trust with a student.
Does that not come with pressure though?
No, because I think with trust, because you're going to tell them the right information.
Obviously, you're both really good coaches and just how that would feel.
It's that idea that, as Pete just alluded to a minute ago, when somebody comes into your teaching bay who knows nothing about you, not been recommended to you, let's say, because that was a big thing. If you've been recommended, you have trust. If it's someone completely cold coming into your bay, you had to really warm them up.
Overperform almost.
Yeah, and get them to love you. Get them to understand that everything I'm telling you is going to be for the benefit of you. Everything that I'm going to help you with. But there was always a level of resistance for someone cold until they saw some proof that you know what you're talking about. I felt like people coming in from YouTube or had been recommended, you don't have to prove that. I could say to them first swing, right, this tip's going to help you become unbelievable at golf. Stand on one leg, spin around 3 times and hit a golf shot. And they'll go, okay, yeah, I'll do that.
But,
and because they had so much trust, I'd say that was an example of, I wouldn't say that, but because they had so much trust in what you're saying, it kind of works. Yeah. They want it to work.
And were you the same, Peter? Do you feel, or did you ever feel a bit of kind of pressure almost? Or
No. Oh, me and Rick used to have like competitions about how silly things we could get people doing, how far trust would go. No, it was the same. I think, like Rick alluded to, it was whenever you go for a lesson, generally, unless it's a very simple thing, generally, whenever you change anything within someone's swing, there's going to be a moment of awkwardness and there's going to be bad shots. And what the video certainly allowed you to do is say, now listen, just stick with it, give it 10 minutes and it'll be better. And
that trust,
so they can stick with it a lot more.
Yeah, it's a bit like if you had a tradesman come around to your house that had been recommended from your mum and dad, like, you're probably not going to question their work, really, because...
No, I get... The only thing I was thinking is a silly analogy.
Do you mean pressure on the actual tradesmen themselves?
It was more like, you feel... But then at the same time, if someone recommends, like, a nice pizza restaurant and it's got the Instagram follow, it looks good, and you go, often you are, you love it, but you might think, oh, I didn't know what... You know, you almost... Yeah, I didn't know if anybody... I don't know, it felt hard that you think, right, this guy, he's come 2 hours from Newcastle. I've got to be good today.
I think that's the only time that took a little bit adjusting and getting used to is when people started to come in from a long distance. So people started to come from Scotland and eventually people like literally flying
in. That must
in
feel different.
Different countries.
It has to.
It was strange and... But you just get used to it.
Yeah. The only thing I found more challenging towards the end of coaching full time or teaching a full diary, they're obviously coming in to see you, to see Rick or Pete from the video, right? So you're full on, that's who you are. But sometimes after 12 hours being that person, that energy, it's hard to maintain. Mm. So sometimes by the back end of the day, they're expecting Rick at 10 out of 10 energy level, because that's what they see on the videos, or Pete at 10 out of 10. But by the time you've coached, you've...
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Been at that standard all day long.
Yeah.
Sometimes you get to the final lessons, you're like, you might only be 6 out of 10 personality wise, energy wise of what you normally are, and you feel like, I need to really try and up my game here. And that was something that was quite taxing for me in the end. Like, I get home and I didn't want to talk. Like, literally, I got home and I didn't want to talk to my wife, like, because I'd been 10 out of 10 Rick all day. And that was the hardest thing. It was that energy level, really.
One of the things that you said, I kind of know your story on this, Rick, but I'm interested to hear from Pete. Your lessons became, towards the end, less of a lesson and more like almost like a red letter day. People could come to meet Rick Shields, have a Rick Shields experience. When did that start happening for you, Pete? Like, I'm guessing it was the same. People almost still come to get better at golf, obviously, but the more come and see the favourite YouTuber and meet you in real life and get a picture and shake your hand. Was that probably the end of Trafford or the Quest days, or did it ever happen?
Yeah, that was maybe a little bit more towards when we had our own place. But to be fair, I didn't really, I was very much in kind of coaching mode all the time. So I didn't really see that. Mm-hmm. Even if it was getting that feeling, I would probably always steer them more towards their actual golf.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if they just wanted to talk, that's fine. But it's kind of like, well, you know, just see you at some shots here.
I remember this guy came from Germany or somewhere, and he booked in for like a 2-hour lesson because we had the online booking. He just booked in the diary, and he turned up and he was dead excited. And literally, we spoke for 40-odd minutes of the 2 hours. Yeah. I wanted him to get on the mat and hitting shots. And I kind of, in that discussion, I'm saying, oh, where have you come from? I've come from Germany. I was like, all right, wow, so you're here for the week, you're here for family. He went, no, I've come for today.
Mm-hmm. God.
Right. So yeah, I flew out this morning. I hired a car from Manchester Airport. I've driven up here to come and see you. I've got 2 hours with you because I couldn't book any more time in your diary. I drive back home to Manchester Airport tonight and then fly home. And I'm thinking, we've just used 40 minutes. Because he was asking me about YouTube, asking me about what
the
next video is.
He's not come for a lesson, though.
Well, that's it. That's where it became. And it got to a point where we were getting quite tight on time. We've been chatting and he was enjoying chatting. So it wasn't as if I was trying to force it on him. And I kind of said, right, we probably do need to start doing some work here. Like, what do you want to work on? He goes, right, so now, because I've got you for 2 hours, I'm thinking, not anymore. Like, you've got me for 30 minutes now. I want to work on putting, chipping, driving. I want to get more distance. Could you just check my shafts on my irons? Like, thinking, oh my God. And that was the point with me. It's like, I either need to change my model. I can't let people book in for 2 hours coming from Germany, or I need to kind of shift what I'm doing, really. Because I didn't feel like he was getting the full benefit out of it. I felt like I wasn't giving the service I wanted to give out of it. But it was kind of weirdly no one's fault, really.
Question, again, I've got a little question for the pervy. It's good to hear you both together. And I'm kind of putting words in Rick's mouth here, so please feel free, Rick, to jump in. But I think over the last couple of years, Rick is still, you know, you don't coach people one-on-one, but you make videos online that thankfully help hundreds of thousands, millions of people. But you're a golf coach, but you've almost become more like a golf personality, I would say. And I think, would you kind of agree with that? From your own, you wanted to. I think for you, Pete, again, you obviously have massive following and a personality, but I still think, or certainly I've got the impression that, and this isn't a bad thing, by the way, that you want to be still known as a real, authentic coach. And I know you brought a book out like 12, 18 months ago. Do you still feel now that you've got your team on board and stuff and you're growing and more of a media brand, do you want to be more that kind of personality? Or do you still want to be a really kind of authentic coach who's in the same conversations as some of the real, real good guys? I guess you can't do both, I imagine.
I think the best way of probably explaining it, I would like the coaching aspect to be part of that character. You know, it sounds like I'm kind of building a character here, but my content still is very, even when I'm trying to play and improve my own game, that's still based around coaching other people. And certainly when, you know, stop making videos, whenever that would be, I still want to carry on as a coach. So, you know, keeping that grounding in there is pretty important for me.
You don't coach currently?
No.
Are you looking to set something up to coach again? Is that anything that's in the pipeline?
I will do eventually, but I think, you know, we're in an exceptionally lucky position where if we reopen coaching for reopen our diaries for coaching, we could be pretty much guaranteed that we could fill it. There's no rush. There's no rush.
Just to quit on the last podcast we did then on Tuesday, you were this discussion about how coaches you think should still play to some degree, which I get. Do either of you, when you're making online coaching, feel that you're a hindrance because you don't coach face to face anymore and you might lose that? What's the word I'm looking for? I don't know, but do you think you lose that at all by not seeing people hands on?
It's probably a good point, yeah. And even though I can only speak for myself on this, but I'm sure people kind of bounce in. For me, even though I don't teach full time now, I did it for so many
years.
Got
the hours in the bank.
I feel like I've really put the effort in. And even now, like, we went and played with a friend of ours the other day and I coached him.
Yeah.
And I'll still coach, like, my kids a bit more now. And even friends who maybe come and have a whack in the golf simulator at home or go to the driving range. I feel like I'm always, or even on Instagram, sometimes I'll flick through a swing and I might not be able to every time tell them exactly what I need to tell them through online or visual. But I'm always looking at a swing going, oh yeah, that's what you need to fix. That's what you need to look at. Do you know what I mean? So it's like, even though I don't coach every single second of the day now, I feel like I've done the hours.
You're the same, hours. Pete.
Yeah, I think certainly from coaching a certain level of golfer, I think the big difference is, and this is something I do want to try and look at a little bit more in the future, is, you know, give me a 30 handicapper with a slice, and I'm pretty confident that after not coaching in a while, I could still help that golfer. But let's say an elite player came in, you know, that's a different style and level of coaching, which I've not done in a long time.
Is that more personable as well? You've got to be on WhatsApp a bit more. Like Dan Whittaker with his clients, for example, I'm guessing he's more, you might get a text on a random Tuesday, my game was off today. Like, do you think you've got to have that more relationship with them as well?
Yeah, you've got to be there. Certainly if you're going to coach say a tour pro, like, that's a full-time responsibility.
You've got to be at their beck and call.
100%, yeah.
Do you guys ever feel like, I know you said this when you were playing, Rick, you sometimes used to feel like some of the pros in local comps might be a bit like, look at these guys with cameras and stuff, which I'm sure they're probably more used to now because it's been a longer time. But do you ever feel like some of the other PGA pros look at what you two have done and almost feel like a little bit jealous and almost play it down, that, oh, these aren't, because you sometimes see the comments, and obviously I'm completely on your guys' side, clearly, but they're just range pros who got lucky. Does that annoy you? Do you get that much still or what?
It don't bother me, no. I think maybe initially there was some resistance from some pros, but generally that was just a misunderstanding. So it just didn't understand what was going on. And I didn't understand what was happening, to be honest, at the beginning of YouTube either. Like, I didn't know what I was doing. I was just putting stuff out there and hope it worked.
I think the reason I say that is because, again, I know how this works, but to the outset, to some people, it just looks so easy, doesn't it? A video on Facebook or on YouTube of you fixing a slice looks to be so easy. And these coaches at home might know it themselves, but actually, there's so much more to it. And there's so many people doing it now. It's such a hard market to crack, certainly if you started it tomorrow.
Yeah, it was timing as well. Like, we got lucky with timing. Yeah. We were early into that space when not many people were doing it. And we managed to get a bit of a head start. And obviously, you know, it takes hard work to maintain it, but you know, there is a bit of luck involved as well.
Yeah.
Certainly from my point of view, because if I hadn't gone up to Trafford, I wouldn't have started any YouTube stuff.
Am I right in thinking then, back to college, that actually at MyScope, part of the course and stuff now are about this kind of career?
Well, I've seen that because I've been tagged in like posts where students from MyScope, as part of their assignment, have to look and watch our videos.
Yeah.
And or YouTube golfers in general videos and highlight how do they present the content, how are they leveraging social media to grow their business.
I think, well, it was last year, the one
and
that
the PGA as well.
Yeah, the PGA, well. That was the one that got mad. Me. So we're on like a PGA training.
That's what I'm thinking of actually, rather than MySco.
I've seen it at MySco as well. For me, I found a little bit resistant, certainly when I started playing in competitions, kind of 15, 16, I felt very much not welcome there, just because who are these bloody jokers with a couple of cameras thinking they're all that? I felt like, but that was probably my own perception. Once I got to know a few of them, there wasn't really that hostility. But I think now, and I've done a seminar with the PGA. Have you done a seminar with the PGA? You have, haven't you?
No, I'm not with the PGA.
I did a seminar or webinar.
You're not PGA anymore?
No,
with the PGA. No, sorry.
I did a webinar through lockdown with the PGA, and they said it was their most attended webinar they've ever done, which is great. Obviously, I really appreciate that. And I can only imagine that I was only talking YouTube, I wasn't talking social media. I think now if you looked at, I think there was like 600 PGA pros listened in because 600 PGA pros want to get better at social media. Mm-hmm. And they want to see, let's say, what you and me have done, what me and my golf have done, what Crossfield has done, as many others, Chris Ryan, Danny Maud, Matt Fryer now more recently, Andy Carter, lots of PGA pros who have leveraged the platforms and grown. I'm sure I've missed someone out there and annoyed someone, but have grown and taking advantage of it really and grown their businesses, let's say. But you're dead right. I've always had this mantra, and I'm sure you're the same. Like, I want it to look easy, I want it to look effortless to make the videos, but we know it's not. Like, we know it's hard, and that the editing and the team that we have here now are phenomenal at what they do, but like, that's hard to stay consistent with it for so long. I think that's a big thing as well, which stays so consistent for like 6-7 years now. I've been super consistent on uploads. I don't know where I'm getting at with this story, but I feel like...
I think it's just that it's hard and it looks, isn't it? Yeah. I think that was the thing when it first started to really pop. I think I did see a bit more of it online and people... there's a bit more of a feeling as much as anything. It might not have stats to hand, obviously, but it feels to me more like a lot of these real authentic pros are so much more open to what you guys are doing and actually respect, probably that word respect it a lot more, which they should do, obviously.
Yeah, I feel like now if we wanted to... I mean, we've seen it even like with David Lepeter doing videos with like Me and My Golf. I reckon 6 years ago that just wouldn't have happened.
No, not at all.
They've been like, well, why do I need these guys? What's the point? Mm. But they've got books to sell. They've got things to promote. Like, you've done stuff with Carl Morris and...
Gary Nicol.
Yeah, Nicol, he's good, yeah.
Like, again, I could imagine them being quite traditional in their thoughts, but it might take time and they start to, you know... be more receptive to change and social media. I mean, even us having David Cannon on a few weeks ago, I couldn't imagine that would have happened, bar the fact that actually there is an audience there, there is a following, etc.
No, it's interesting.
Don't quite know again where I'm going with that topic, but
it's just how perceptions change, isn't it? And how it will continue to do so. And there's always, like, even now, I don't know how you feel on this one, Pete, but like, TikTok's become a big platform, and there's some guys who have like quite big followings on TikTok, and that's their kind of main platform. And I still don't massively get it. I do to some degree, but they're going to be like the next generation, and it's always evolving, and hopefully YouTube survives forever. But there's always, there's probably guys out there who are doing TikTok coaching, who've now getting people coming, traveling half an hour to go and see them 1 hour because they found them on TikTok.
Yeah.
And it's all, I know neither of you two would do this for 1 second, I know, but people might look down on that and go, TikTok, I can't go TikTok golf coach. But that's going to be the next evolution, isn't it? And it's always changing.
But it's always what people don't understand as well.
Yeah.
So certainly when kind of we were starting out YouTube, if you wanted to be a successful golf coach and to be a more renowned golf coach, you had to be on TV or in a magazine. Mm-hmm. That was seen as like the thing. Now it's completely changed. like TV and magazines, like they're not on the way out, obviously, but they hold a lot less sway than if you take in the whole social media. Now, we're okay. Well, obviously got a massive following now, you guys on YouTube, for example. YouTube, I don't think, is going to go anywhere, but you never know. But you never know, do you?
It's no, like, please don't go anywhere.
It's like Facebook as well. Like, you guys, massive following on Facebook. There's not any young people going on Facebook. Mm-hmm. They're on TikTok.
Yeah.
And in 20 years, people, if TikTok's still going, will still use TikTok, but the kids will be on something completely
exactly.
different.
Exactly.
It's always new platforms.
And we won't understand, like, why are people walking around with AR glasses on? What yeah. are they doing? I don't understand it.
Well, it's like now, a very different example, but, like, I don't massively still get, like, esports personally. I get it, but I don't particularly subscribe to it. I don't enjoy watching people play FIFA against each other. Mm-hmm. But that's become a professional sport yeah. now, so you have to embrace it and be open-minded to it. And
so much,
you
know,
you've done a thing. Didn't you do that thing for the golf, the WGT? Yeah, there's a yeah. tournament, and you like hosted it with yeah. Seb. Now, at the time, I was thinking, I don't really get this, but you can't be ignorant to it, because that's the way the world's going. And we could be hopefully sat here in 20 years' time, whatever, and there might be literally the E Open, and there could be guys playing the Open St Andrews on the
it's crazy, isn't it?
On the laptop, on the PlayStation, whatever, the PlayStation 10 by then, whatever. And that's what it could be. And you have to, in this industry, stay open-minded.
Tiger could still win more majors.
Yeah.
Just E-majors. going into YouTube as well, Pete, like, how much do you, like, obsess with it? Like, as in stats, growth? Are you really kind of into that?
Yes, but not me personally. So David, who kind of is my brand manager now, what he's brought partly to the table is an understanding and a knowledge of those things. Like, I can look at YouTube numbers, YouTube stats, and the analytics now you can delve into so deeply, but interpreting those and actually understanding how that relates to what you should put out, that's not a strength of mine. Like, I don't understand what a lot of it means, but that's what having people in position who know what they're doing is a massive yeah. advantage.
Oh, definitely. It's, obviously, guys have such an influence on that as well for us.
I think the downside to that, we do so much of it as well, but you can almost go, it can also start to ruin content sometimes. You can be so obsessive with trying to find like the right title, the right thumbnail, taking too much out the edit. It's a science.
By YouTube.
That's, you kind of work for YouTube, and that sometimes upsets me a bit. It's like, I'd love to do like a really wholesome video.
You got to try and stay authentic. That's the key. Like, we could all put out videos which I think we know would get a lot of views and great, but as soon as you just start chasing views,
that's when it starts to. Speaking of chasing views, though, that was a really good segue. One of the clips we'll probably use from this video is you two falling out. So there's been a lot of I'll start this fresh, so we've got it as a perfect clip. There's been a lot of people asking, have Rick Shields and Peter Finch fell out? We see it on comments pretty much every day. Every day, I would say.
Ricky,
somewhere
two hands. Ricky, two fists.
You have got two hands, Rick. Yeah, that's correct. That would help.
Your counting's improving.
Yeah. Ricky Knuckle Fists. The new one.
There's people asking every day on Rick's platforms. I see it on yours, stuff, Pete, on Instagram, on Twitter, every time you post a video. Or either way, it's when you're playing with Pete, when you're playing with Rick. Let's just settle this now. And also, we didn't help ourselves after last week's podcast with, you know, the Open fiasco. Have you two fell out?
Have we fallen out, Pete?
I don't know, Rick. Have we fallen out?
We have not fallen out, everybody.
That's news to me.
The fact that Pete rang me when he got here this morning to say he was here and didn't ring you.
I don't think he has my number. I changed my number last year and I don't think he's got it. No, not at all. I think because obviously we spent so much time together back in the day, and I think that's where maybe we work so closely together. Like, we were at Trafford together. Mm-hmm. We obviously moved to Lydon together, set up our own academy. We moved to Burnley together, set up our own academy. Like, all the time we were with each other. So making content was very easy. And I think that's where possibly the things have changed. We've grown differently in directions, in business and growth and teams and expansion. And then once the kind of academy kind of fizzled out, we weren't there every day. Because what was mad, we went through a time, a period, certainly at Burnley, where we literally never saw each other because we coached on different days. So, like, I'd coach, I can't remember the structure now.
It's only a couple of days a week, wasn't it, each?
Like, well, on different days.
Yeah, so. I'd coach maybe, I can't remember, you Thursday, Sunday. Few, and Pete would be there Friday, Saturday, and I might film there Monday, and you might film there Tuesday, because it was one bay. We literally never saw each other. And I think that time of period, everybody felt like because we had the academy together, we'd see each other every day. But because it was only one bay, it's literally how they ever got a chance to see each other. And I think just over time, it's funny with friends and certainly male friends. I always feel like some friends of mine, I don't see for like 5 years maybe. Mm-hmm. But as soon as you kind of see each other again, you remember, and you have beers and you have a laugh and you have a joke. Like hopefully this podcast has come out today. Sometimes if you don't see each other as often, it just doesn't happen like that, does it?
No, and I think...
You might say me wrong. You might say, no, I've already ate you.
No, I think you're right. No, you are right. I think it's obviously easier, and certainly I found this with my lads. It's just easier to do stuff when you're together. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, certainly over the last kind of 12 to 15 months, physically, a lot of the time, not being able to get together with people. So that obviously puts another spanner in the works. But I think the fact is that the content that we film has also changed. So a lot of the stuff that we did film together, you know, three-part course vlogs, you know, film kind of once a week play, they'd be put out. I mean, they were easy to do and easy to film and edit, but we don't really do those.
Well, if we're being honest, and they have a massive following, those course vlogs, and people will be again commenting below saying how much they missed them, and I'm sure you guys are going to do more in the future, different styles and stuff, but... You hit the nail on the head. They were easy to do. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the other guy could hold the camera when you were hitting the shot. It was three videos for that week done, three on your channel, three on yours. Your content was almost ticked off after an afternoon's work, really.
Yeah.
And as you've both got bigger followings and your content has to be so much better, you know, you've got more people watching.
Production's got better.
Yeah.
And I feel like now kind of course vlogs, it is the lazy content sometimes. It's the easy content. And we saw it from stats, and again, going back into stats, it's not, again, unfortunately, from YouTube, it's not the thing that really pulls in the mass views or the... It's not really, is it? And certainly when you break it up into three parts and stuff like that.
I think the problem we've got now, and we need to just do something about it, but like because you've not filmed together for such a while, when you do, it's got to be a good video and a good idea. I don't think it could really work, just like go and play nine holes randomly. Do you know what I mean? It's got to be...
I think the first one could be.
Well, yeah.
Because nobody's seen it for so long. And that's the other thing, like, it's what is the idea? Because I think one of the last times we filmed was at Formby.
Yeah, I think it was last time.
And... That was when we did it with Matt. Mm-hmm. And weirdly, we did like three challenges, but each challenge was different.
Mm-hmm. So they did well on views, didn't they?
Each one separated. The time before that, weirdly, was at Formby. And we did a challenge where we played with three clubs. Mm-hmm. And you had that dice and you brought the dice. And that was a different challenge. And that it's that kind of like that angle. Like it's got to have purpose. When we had the big match in Vegas,
that was good.
Mm-hmm. Like that was the match. That was like something that people really built up to, and we kind of had that the beef and the tension beforehand. And like even Secondhand Club Challenge, people love that. Obviously, I think with the Secondhand Club Challenge, a lot of people like it's got to be a time as well where series finish, and I'm a big fan of series finishing when they're doing well.
Yeah,
because there's nothing worse than flogging a dead horse and trying to keep making them all the time. So I just think it fizzles out.
Yeah, no, I'd agree with that. I mean, listen, we've also got to say, you know, you're obviously terrified about playing me at the moment, and that's perfectly understandable. You know, it's what they say about hammer hand shields or whatever you're calling yourself.
So,
now.
All right then,
the fear
right now,
is the fear the is real.
Right now, let's have a match.
Okay,
but give me a little bit of time to prepare.
Can I set a date?
A little bit of time.
Just
all you do is play golf. And every now and again break 75. Mate, I shot 79 in my last competitive round. You're better than me at
that.
That
is true, actually.
I think you should actually give me some shots.
That is true. I probably would.
I think the start of August would work.
I'm very busy in August.
I'm sure you
are. I'm very busy in August.
Mate, I know you're going to be busy hiding.
Give me till...
Jalemba.
I'd go September.
September?
Yeah, it's only past August.
Well done, Rick. Rick knows the calendar.
The kids are back at
killing
school.
It at the moment.
September.
September?
Yeah. Gives people look at
my birth is September. It could be my birthday treat.
Let's not say it on the podcast.
This is the podcast you're saying it on right now.
But have you got a venue in mind?
I'll
pick the date, you pick the venue.
Frick, listen, man. Anywhere, anytime. stick some holes in the concrete for all I care, mate.
And we're going to, what was it called? The one that we used to play it all the time. Is it even shut down now? Flixton.
Flixton, oh, no, Flixton, mate. Royal Flixton's still there. Love Flixton.
No, we'll set a date. We'll go somewhere and let's have Rick versus Pete, the match two.
Yeah. Okay.
September. Pay-per-view for people listening. We'll take it off YouTube. We'll put it on Thriller.
Yes.
Underneath the Logan Paul. What, I think £30 a view's decent.
Oh, I'd say that's cheap.
Yeah. 80-20.
We've gone to an hour again, by the way. We're an hour already.
Any other questions?
Yeah, let's just... So basically, thanks again, Pete, for coming on today. We've done two podcasts. It's been really good, really kind of insightful. Next week's podcast will be back to normal. So if you've got any emails to send us, maybe it's a Dear Rick, maybe it's a nightmare golf shot or a stupid golf rule, email those to podcast@rickshields.com. But yeah, we've got some questions on the Facebook page, which were for Pete. We've had loads.
How many shots would you beat Rick by?
Oh, God, crikey. I don't know. Like, over... Ooh,
over 18 holes.
Over 18.
Let's be quick fire this.
Oh, right, over 18 holes. Well, it takes a lot of calculation. I'd say, at the moment, 8 to 9.
Okay, fair enough.
What? You're not going to beat me by 8 or 9 shots.
I don't know. I mean, in September. Bear in mind, that gives you time to prepare. Gives me time to prepare as well.
I'll let you have a little shot at me, Pete. Because wow. What do you think of guys' trash talk?
Yeah, I think it was an interesting conversation. You have to watch the last podcast to figure that out.
It's not his first rodeo.
Do Rick or Pete miss teaching one-to-one lessons?
Yeah, I do. I think there's a lot of other stuff to keep us going at the moment, though. So I do miss it, and I will get back to it eventually. But
I'm the same. I miss it, but I miss doing it full-time. Like, if I was doing it full-time, I'd love it again.
Yeah.
Doing it like sporadically, it's just so difficult to manage.
Andy Clark has said, what do you like to do away from golf and YouTube?
Eat and drink. That's my main hobby.
And walk the dogs.
And I'm really good at it.
There's actually...
Favourite Scottish golf course?
Ooh.
Royal Aberdeen, I think, still.
What's that one you played the other day that looks sick?
Dumbarney.
Is that really good?
That's really nice.
Yeah, that's class.
Really. Where is that, by the way?
Right near St Andrews.
Why didn't we go?
We were nearly going to play it because we did King's Barnes instead.
Yeah, it's just over the hill.
What do you see as the end goal
in life? Just
maybe not in
enjoy
life.
Enjoy yourself, really.
Let's go. End goal for. It is a tough question because I don't really.
There's
know
no end answer. Goal, is there?
End goal for Quest for the Open.
Win the Open.
Yeah, win the Open.
That's a good
one. Live the glory joke.
This is a bit more of a serious one, but a good one. And we probably should have asked this earlier on. But does Pete think all the training, fitness, and speed actually help on the golf course? Quite interested to hear your thoughts on that one.
Yes. Certainly, kind of when I was... That was my main focus when I was doing the Whoop Fits. That was like a real concentrated effort. And on the course, it was paying off. And then I did this bloody video with Bryson's grips. And that's what set my wrist off. And after that, I couldn't do as much.
Do you think you hurt your back, though, doing the ridiculous swing speed training?
Not on my back, no. My back... do you remember I said I got injured at football? It's the same place in my back.
Oh, really?
So it's still like an ongoing issue.
For like 20 years or whatever.
Yeah.
This is really...
When someone did a slide tackle.
Really heavy question, so I might take the mood.
Sorry about that.
Really kind of a deep question, this one, from Norman Terry. How do you maintain that level of pure sexiness?
I mean, moisturise pretty regularly. Don't shave.
Are you still perceived to have the best golf swing on YouTube?
I'm not sure perceives the right word. I think recognised.
Who do you think swings it best on YouTube?
I don't know. Probably George Bryan, I would have said.
Do you think he's the best YouTube golfer?
I would have thought so, yeah.
I'd say Bryson DeChambeau now, actually. Started uploading.
He's not got a nice swing, though, is he?
Who would you beat in YouTube golf? Question by Anonymous.
By Richard Shields.
In YouTube golf, I'm confident that I'd beat everybody on my given day.
To be fair, I think you're good. The guys in America are good, though, aren't they? Like Micah. I always get his name wrong. Micah.
It's a tough thing with golf, isn't it? Because it's like, it's literally just on the day.
Question.
But I'm confident.
Question, and that's the last one, but on a serious note now, do you believe, I know this isn't about a dig, but most people think they're better at golf than they are, because I do. I think I'm better at golf than I am, and I hold my hands up. In my head, I think I'm off scratch, and I'm not.
I'd say one thing which is good about the new handicap system, that'll actually show it up. If people are playing regularly, the way that that works, I think that gives a much truer reflection of where people are at.
Yeah,
I think that'd be good. Obviously, you need to give it a little bit of time. Probably after this year, you'll get to know a little bit more. But I think that's a good measure.
Do you think with golf, though, it's because, like, at my home course, I've birdied every hole and I've eagled quite a lot of them, obviously, over years and years of playing.
Flex.
No, I know, but I know in my head, it's obviously not, I'm never going to shoot 52, clearly, but I couldn't, well, 53. I could shoot 18 under par, yeah. But it's not going to happen. But then, do you get what I mean? It's kind of like, you know you can do it, but...
I think a handicap as well, we've discussed, like, a handicap is a snapshot of you on a good day.
Yeah.
Like, you shouldn't play to your handicap all the time. What would you guess your handicap is right now?
I think I did a video on it last year, year before, and I think it was like, was it plus two?
Was that with the normal, the old one?
That was, it was kind of like a bastardized version of the new one. I did it in a way which made sense from all my other comp results. But I don't know. I'm probably a plus handicapper, but I don't know what I'd be.
Yeah.
A lot of the young kids now are plus six, plus
seven.
That's
the thing. It's ridiculous. Handicaps do become irrelevant at that level, don't they? As long as you're low enough to get into like British amateur or whatever, it just becomes irrelevant. There's loads of questions. Some of them are quite long. Are we happy with those so far? Or anything else you want to... there is a lot of good ones. A lot of. Would you lamp Rick from Liam Crowther?
Would I lamp him?
Yes.
I like that terminology.
Let's see how September match goes first. Yeah.
I'm ready for this.
Only he's ready for 2 months away. I'm so ready, I'm going to delay it 60 days.
Give me 2 months and I'll be ready for this.
Scott Fryer said, what do you prefer, hitting a stinger or seeing Guy back making the coffee behind the scenes and playing darts?
Oh, ouch. Stinger.
That is a stinger.
Yeah, never mind.
Stinger comment.
I've had enough of it the last couple of weeks. I'm going to quit. I was actually nearly quit the podcast last week. I've said this about 3 times, but then I decided to... grow up a little bit, and if you say things online, you've got to be...
That's a frigging double his salary, it's just to keep him on.
Oh, no, it's a tactic. Well, we chatted about it.
Yeah.
Now, this is all, we discussed this 2 months ago.
He's a very good friend of mine. I'm going to write a check to £15,000 in a minute, and my new salary of £400,000 a week.
I asked the Open to keep it quiet. I actually got through both qualifying stages.
I gave Harry Kane a little call and said, right, you want to leave Tottenham, what do you have to do? He gave me some tips, and there we go.
Well, that's been good. September, something for people to look forward to. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like you're giving me like death eyes now.
I'm looking forward to it.
I feel like he's going to go back and grind his ass off now and give you a good
I'm not releasing any videos for like 2 months now. I'm going into the cave.
I'm glad I motivate you. I feel like he's going to batter me.
I feel like you're going to walk out of here now, Pete, and Rick's like, why the hell did let me do that? But I'm loving it. I'm kind of stirring it a little bit, really.
I think you need...
I'm like, cut that from the podcast. I'm not playing against
him. I think you need to reassess your game.
I think I should play in competitions again.
If you want to. I mean, you don't... I wouldn't say you...
You missed out to. What caused you to quit. The real elephant in the room. Sorry, but genuinely.
Lumina.
Yeah.
That was what, 100%.
Oh, yeah, no. 100%,
I made you quit.
I was there, I saw. I saw the disintegration of a golfer, honestly.
Actually, after the round, I said to Pete, should I NR or what do I do here? And I went in the clubhouse and they said, well, if you NR, you forgive your prize money. I was like, oh, crap, I've got to do 2 more rounds. Yep. Then.
Keep it going.
That was 100% what caused you to quit playing pro, because I ended up on Golf WRX. It ended up everywhere. And you still get it today.
For me, it was that idea that I don't even know why I was so out of practice. In my head, I wasn't doing open qualifying. That was it. So, like, I think that was in February time or March. I think it was Feb. And from July the previous year when I did open qualifying, or June, previous year, I'd played no competitive golf, and so it's like 6 months out of competitive golf, and then thrown straight into that. I was like, I don't know how to play golf anymore under competitive standards.
Tough one at Lumen as well, because it was the first round was on the tighter course. I can't remember.
It was so hard. But anyway, that's why I quit.
I had done the Great Vanity. It was quite easy though, really, that couple of days.
Practice round, played it ridiculous,
mate. Honestly, I think
so good in the practice round.
I don't think you give yourself enough credit for the fact you're a good golfer, but also that you could be a really good golfer.
Oh, thanks, mate. I also made the mistake of getting a bit drunk the night before that Lumina Pro-Am.
Well, Lumina Pro-Am, of course you were. I think everybody was.
I think my hands were like this on the first tee.
I think the playing field was completely level, because from what I saw, there wasn't anybody on water that night. But that one of the Swedish teams where we got in the morning at 7 were smashing the pints.
Maybe you didn't have enough. Maybe that's what it was. Have more. That's what Pete does.
That's what it
is. Bladdered before he plays.
It's the secret.
I would like to, because some bit of me misses it, but too much of it doesn't.
What about then? If you beat Pete, then you enter a pro tournament.
Okay. What are we doing? Are we doing match play? Yeah.
Well, listen, if we're going to have a day of it in September, we can make a few videos. We'll have stroke play, match play.
Your apology video when you beat you.
You should have my pretty side.
I've got to get back in Pete's good book. So.
Great. Awesome. Thanks, Pete, for coming on. We'll get everything done. September.
We'll do a post.
My hands are actually sweating.
We'll do a podcast afterwards.
My hands are sweating.
Yeah.
So, well, no, I think you'll be fine. I mean, we should be able to have crowds back by then as well.
Yes.
Mate, imagine. We'd have hundreds of people there. That'd be class.
On the tee, Richie's boo.
Get down into those comments. Would you come and watch
match
two?
Close.
Mano and Mano slugging it around the 18 holes.
I only lost in Vegas because that family came and watched them like 14. I mean, I might have been quite heavily down in the match, but from that point,
yeah,
went to Ratchet.
Well, you could also say you had the best up and down of anyone in the planet when they came to watch.
That's pretty good. Right.
That's an absolute pleasure. Yeah, email us, rate us 5 stars.
Give guys some love, please.
Please, my ego's really hurt.
And we'll see you soon. Thanks, Pete. Good luck with everything. Good luck with the Craft of the Open. Be nice to see you get through regional qualifying.
Yeah, nice to see you out on a golf course.
Nice. Sweet.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.